This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Here we go. It's hour number two. This is my first chance to chat with Latricia Vitaugh, a member of the Minneapolis City Council. She represents Ward 4. Can I tell you this? When I interview individuals or I listen, I want honesty and I want candor and I want them to not avoid the question, and even when it's difficult. And you do that every time. I may not agree with everything, but you do that every time. So bravo on that end. You're living up to it 100%. I want to give credit, and I want to thank you for coming on, Latricia, too. You're on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. I want to give credit to NPR, because I was not aware of this until NPR wrote a story about you and your battle with cancer. Now, this goes back a ways to 2006, but this goes back to where you grew up and what has taken place with the city council. Now, I can sum it up, but you're going to do it way better than me, Latricia. Give people like a 2-3 minute assessment of what happened when you're younger, your battle with cancer, how you're doing, and how this ties into a recent move by the city council.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. And, you know, I know you say you appreciate it, but I know no other way than to be candid.
Good.
And to tell, you know, what my side of it. You know, I know I'm not going to always agree with people, but it's my take, and it's my side of whatever the issue is. But I grew up in Chicago in what later became the toxic donut. I grew up in some housing projects that were surrounded by a lot of toxic places, you know, landfills, lots of machinery companies. You know, we always had like kind of smoke around us, and it has a distinctive smell. Even if I visit now, that exit on the freeway, you know when you're coming up to it because of the smell. And there were water problems. There were a lot of different things going on. I grew up there. I didn't understand that at the time, but my mom did. My mom started to be, she actually said someone from outside of the community informed her on environmental issues, and she moved us to Minneapolis after she became aware. It wasn't the only thing, but it was one of the things that was on her radar, and she knew it wasn't healthy. And I grew up with some health problems. I spent a lot of time at the dentist, and I had a lot of allergies as a kid. And you know, we know now it's related. But when I turned 30. I found out that I had osteosarcoma, and I was treated for that for over an 8-year period. I had different variations of chemo. I've had radiation, and I beat it. I've been cancer-free for 10 years.
Congratulations.
And all the, thank you so much.
That's
and
great.
All the conversations I had were really about where I lived, where I grew up. And I actually knew someone else who had that rare osteosarcoma, someone I grew up with, her son had it, and he passed away at the age of 17, and he still lived in those housing projects in Chicago when he passed away. And so, I had lots of conversations with my doctors to try to find out what was going on, what it was connected to, and we connected it to the toxic donut.
I get that life is daunting and challenging, and nothing is going to be perfect. But there is something wrong with our society where an individual is just growing up, whether it's at a house, condo, apartment, and the surrounding elements to them can bring them cancer, can bring them something which can kill them. And I know we need to have certain facilities in our society, but you are one of millions and millions of examples who had to put up with this. And there is just some level of incompetence and cruelty and unfairness that you're just a kid growing up, and I'm sure your family's trying as hard as possible, and you have to worry about what is in the air and what it might do to you in the short term, and in this case, more importantly, in the long term.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that brings us to what's happening here in Minneapolis.
Yep.
With the HERC, right? The HERC is nowhere near what I endured and what all of my friends, my childhood friends and neighbors endured in the Oak Hill Gardens housing projects. But, you know, people here want relief also. And I just really do. You know, I joined those folks in saying, you know, this is a fight. This is the beginning of the fight. But I also want us to fight properly, because the HERC, we don't want that to turn, that incinerator to turn into a landfill. The trash has to go somewhere, and that's where personal responsibility comes in. That conversation that we had at the council really reminded me of my own personal responsibility to waste and things that I should be doing better, because I have sat down and had chemo treatments, and I know how terrible that feels. And so I don't want us to make the mistake of creating more toxic harm in this community by removing the HERC without a plan, but I also know we can do better.
So the council voted to shut it down. Urges the county to close the incinerator by 2027. It's not the council's decision to do that, though. Where do you think we're headed? What is going to happen?
Advocacy with our Hennepin County commissioners. At least that's where I'm headed. You know, after the holidays, my plan is to start meeting with some of the advocates and see how I can best help them, how I can be an advocate, tell my personal story, and use that personal story to make sure that there are no more Latricia Vitals, right? That some parent isn't worried about their child in this community that I represent. I'm willing to do whatever I need to do to successfully advocate for a better way of us putting our waste in the HERC. And it's going to take all of us. It's not just the people in North Minneapolis whose garbage gets tossed in the HERC. There are people throughout all of Hennepin County. And so that may mean advocating for a successful education campaign for people to understand what they need to do around recycling and waste first.
I hope it happens.
I do, too. I know it's going to happen.
Good. Let's do this, Latricia. Hang on. We'll take a short pause, and I want to get to issues with the city of Minneapolis and with Latricia's responsibility. This is Latricia Vitaugh. We talked about her health, and it's a significant part of the story, but there's a lot going on in the city of Minneapolis. We talked about yesterday with Adam Dunick from the Downtown Council about a plan for downtown Minneapolis. We got the Labor Standards Board. We got a lot to discuss with Latricia Vitaugh. She's back with us in just minutes on WCCO.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Latricia Vitaugh, city council member, Ward 4, is with us. Among the texts, Latricia is a no-nonsense, honest politician. She's a gem. She should be the next city council president. In my opinion, have her on again. Okay, how about that?
I love it.
Okay. Would you? Okay. How about this? Let's get you on the record. Do you? Would you like to run to be the next city council president, or the mayor's office is up for grabs next year? The present mayor, Jacob Fry, who's on this show quite frequently, he's made it clear that he's running again. He hasn't had a formal announcement. Are you potentially going to throw your proverbial hat in the ring for that office?
No. I'm running for city council. I'm going to be running for reelection to serve North Minneapolis. I love North Minneapolis, and I've just started to find my way around that city hall and get the things I need to get done as a Northsider. You know, I love it. I love being able to represent the Fourth Ward and just the North Side, because we don't have dividing lines here. So I'm looking forward to continuing to serve North Minneapolis.
Do you plan on endorsing a candidate for mayor? Would you like to do that right now?
No, I'm not. It's not that I'm not endorsing the candidate, but, you know, I don't know what's happening. I haven't had conversations with folks about, like, you know, what their plans are for the North Side and what, you know, like what they want to help me with as a council member representing the North Side.
What if I run? Will you announce today that you're endorsing my candidacy?
No.
Wow. I mean, Dave, did she have to go
that's
that?
The correct answer.
Did she have to answer that quickly?
I'm actually disappointed. It took her just a moment too long, I thought.
I have to have conversations with the people of Ward 4. I, as much as it feels like to the average person that I'm just downtown by myself, I'm downtown on the shoulders of 33,000 people who live in the ward that I represent. And so I don't make decisions for myself. So you know, what you've asked is something that's maybe a little too impulsive for the North Side. We need to marinate on what you're going to give to us. And, you know, take that and think about it, and then we make decisions.
Okay, how about this? If I'm able to bring back Victory 44, which was one of my favorite restaurants in town, which is in North Minneapolis, do I now have your vote?
We need a little more than that. Thank you for bringing it back.
Yeah, I'd like to bring it back. All right, Latricia Vitaugh is with us. Okay, for the folks who are listening right now, who live in the suburbs and continually complain about Minneapolis and foist plenty of that blame on the city council and say the city council is out of touch and they need to make adjustments to convince me to go back to Minneapolis. What do you say to those folks?
Well, I think it is. I think they're onto something, right? And I don't think it's just people that are outside of Minneapolis. I think there are people who live in Minneapolis that feel like the Minneapolis City Council is out of touch. There's been lots of things that have been put at the forefront of an agenda for the council that I just don't agree with, and I don't believe has to, you know, focuses on what people here want me to work on. It's a lot of things that haven't been related to municipal government. I started the year out with their ceasefire resolution that I voted against, that I thought created a lot of division, and that really wasn't what people were asking for in this city. People continue to ask for better public safety. They continue to ask for, you know, better safety when it comes to traffic concerns, when it comes to snow plowing and potholes. Those are the things. I mean, the big issue in North Minneapolis now is the garbage and trash dumping, the problem properties. And so, like, that's what my constituents want me to be working on. And I will hope that my colleagues and whoever the future mayor is, you know, will reach out and say, how do I help you work on what your constituents want to work on?
That's it. Everyday life. Including the essentials and safety. That's what council members should focus on. I should mention that earlier today, Jeremiah Ellison said he is not running for reelection What is your reaction to that?
I kind of knew that. I really love Jeremiah as a person. Him and I don't see eye to eye on policy. For the most part, we vote differently, but we do have a mutual respect for one another. We have a relationship with each other outside of just being on the council together. And I wish him well. I think Jeremiah will pick what's best for him and what's next for him. I'm happy to support him in that. I am looking forward, though, to seeing who's going to be running for council in North Minneapolis, because that is my counterpart. That is the person that mm-hmm. I'm going to work closely with and the most with. And as a council member, I have a strong desire to work with someone in North Minneapolis. I want Ward 5 to be someone who we both have a vision for North Minneapolis that is aligned with the vision of the people of North Minneapolis. And so I'm looking forward to having someone in Ward 5 to work with, to see this vision for Northside around economic development, around safety, around municipal services, because it is, it's basics for people. People want basic government services. People want the city of Minneapolis to work for them. And that's what I want to do. And that's what I want my counterpart in Ward 5 to be doing also.
Let's talk a labor standards board, what passed the city council, then vetoed by the mayor. I know you've been outspoken on this. We recently had Tim Mahoney on, the owner of the Loon. The Loon has been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
Where Tim basically said, what are we doing wrong? What aren't we doing? What more do you want? I've talked to other, not just restaurant owners, but business owners after the initial vote, and they were pretty frustrated. You know, and they feel like, listen.
So was I.
Let me just finish this part. Most businesses, you know, they don't have this enormous profit pool that seemingly a lot of people believe they have. Listen, employees should be treated fair. They should be treated with equity. They should have opportunities for economic growth. This is a city with a high minimum wage, with a lot of diversity in emerging businesses. I know you have questioned this particular plan. What bothers you, or what do you disagree with most, and where do you think we're headed with it?
So I disagree with the Labor Standards Board because there was little to no engagement in North Minneapolis. And if this board is to serve Minneapolis, Northside is a big piece of that. And early on, I asked the advocates to I literally gave them names of workers and people and influencers and business owners who I thought they should be in contact with in North Minneapolis. They said to me, we don't have the connections. We want you to do it. I then pushed back and said, if I were to organize around this issue, it's like I've already taken a position, and I don't want to do that. I want people to be engaged, you know, like whoever they were engaging around the city, if engagement was happening. I've only talked to two advocates about this. I haven't had any engagement from anyone else. And so I was disappointed that the North Side hadn't been engaged. And I was further disappointed that, you know, folks asked for a public hearing and at minimum wasn't able to have that, because I've seen public hearings around ceasefire resolutions and all these things that we don't even have control over.
Correct.
The HERC.
Yeah.
Right. The
yep.
HERC is the most mm-hmm. recent one. I was totally fine with sitting listening to public testimony because people had something to say. But I also want to be fair. And so I was really upset that my colleagues voted down an opportunity for voices to be heard around the issue.
OK,
I'm OK with people disagreeing.
Yep.
I just think that they should have a voice.
I think you nailed it. So why does that keep happening? Why do certain members, let's be honest, it's more the left-leaning members, why, and they're certainly entitled to their opinions, they were elected, they get to do that, but why so often is this happening, where here's our statement, here's where we stand, but let's vote on it, as opposed to more dialogue from all aspects of the city, citizens, other council members, people involved, the employees, the businesses, to state their involvement in the issue you're debating?
Yeah, and what I heard from my colleagues, what some of my colleagues was that this was corporations who wanted to speak, and it's just not true. I had a lot of small businesses, women-owned businesses. I mean, one of my colleagues made a comment about McDonald's being like corporations, and I thought to myself, like, wow, like, he clearly doesn't understand franchises, and that most of the McDonald's in the city of Minneapolis are owned by people of color. The one in his ward in particular is owned by a black man from North Minneapolis. And so, you know, it's just misinformation. And that's why you don't vote against people having a voice, because you get to hear from the black and brown and women owned McDonald's owners in the city of Minneapolis. And they should have a voice, too. If, even though it's a corporation, they're franchised. People take their money. Most of them start working at McDonald's, save up, and then buy a franchise. It's not like Ronald McDonald is not the owner of McDonald's.
What? Wait a second. Latricia, I hope cancer never touches your body or people close
Thank
to you again.
You.
I really enjoyed the conversation. Have a very happy Thanksgiving, and we'll reach out again soon.
Same to you. Thank you so much,
Latricia,
for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Latricia Vitaw, city council member, Minneapolis. Give me more of Latricia Vitaw in the political conversation in this country. Patrick DeHaan from Gas Buddy. What he's saying about gas prices off last night's announcement from the president. Not a surprise. The president-elect talking about tariffs. His favorite word, DeHaan, next. On Truth Social, the president-elect says on January 20th, one of my first executive orders, I will sign all necessary documents to charge Mexico and Canada a 25% tariff on all projects coming into products, excuse me, coming in the U.S. He's putting pressure on drugs. He also talks about a 10% tariff on China. This isn't new news that he was going to do this, but it is his latest declaration. Patrick DeHaan, who I follow on the Twitter machine, at Gas Buddy Guy, responded to this. Higher gas prices are coming primarily for the Great Lakes states. Oh, goody. That includes us. Patrick with another tweet. Why? Because refineries in the Great Lakes, Rockies, and Midwest rely on Canadian heavy crude oil for feedstock to refine. If these millions of barrels are tariffed at 25%, they are basically going to mandate refineries to pay a lot more for feed. Guess who pays? End users, consumers. Is there any doubt, Patrick, if the president-elect gets his way, that those of us living somewhere in the upper Midwest in the next few months after his election are going to be paying more for gas?
Well, that's the biggest question. Is this going to happen? Is this a negotiation tactic? I mean, it's hard to know, right? I think Trump's record is he says something, but he doesn't always mean it. So
Right. Yep. Is
this one of those things where, you know, there's a clear risk. If these tariffs happen on Canadian crude oil, it's going to mean about an increase in $15 a barrel. That $15 a barrel divides up to about 35 cents a gallon, although it'd probably be more in summer because Canadian oil is heavy. Takes more refining, essentially, more distillation to get as much gasoline. There's a lot of desulfurization that has to happen, which is expensive. Ultimately, if the tariffs happen, they're going to hit you and I really hard because, as I mentioned, refineries, you know, Superior, Wisconsin, St. Paul, a lot of the refineries in our neck of the woods throughout the Great Lakes, Midwest, and Rockies, I mean, we have a direct pipeline from Canada. And you don't just change. It's like going to the parts store, right? Your car runs on this. You can't just buy a completely different type of oil and put it in your car. I mean, you can. There's you know, drastic consequences. But refineries are the same way. These Yep. refineries were designed and built to run specific oils. They're stuck needing Canadian oil. So, you know, I've heard folks say, oh, the U.S. can produce more. Well, not really. We don't produce a lot of this heavy crude oil. The U.S. produces light, sweet crude oil, and that's why a lot of our stuff gets exported. So there's no way around this, really. If the tariff hits, it's going to hit you and I to the tune of 35 to 75 cents every time we fill our tanks.
Okay, on that, has there, you know this so much better than me, has there ever been a push to include this type of crude considering what is necessary for this part of the country?
Push it in what way?
Well, for the U.S. to say we're going to have refineries who do this along with what they normally are doing right now, so the reliance on Canada wouldn't be as strong.
Well, here's the problem with that, is Canada has no market for its crude oil aside from these refineries, right? They send us 4 million barrels a day, and without you know, refineries down here, they'd have no market. So the beauty of it for refineries, why do refineries run Canadian oil? It was reliable, and it's always been cheap.
Yeah.
Why is it cheap?
Sure.
Because where's Canada going to send it? They don't have any other options.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mutual interest. U.S. refineries buy this oil at a big discount. Well, that big discount could be going in the way in form of higher tariffs. So you can't. It's very difficult. If Trump were to say, well, you know, let's change these refineries to process more U.S. oil, it would take years and billions of dollars for every single refinery in this region to suddenly make this change. It's expensive.
Patrick Dahan is with us, Gas Buddy Guy on Twitter. Again, the president is saying the 25% tariffs, and he's mentioning fentanyl and illegal aliens stopping the invasion of our country. Most of us think about that with Mexico, not Canada. What is your sense on the reaction from the Trudeau administration and how they might try to respond to the president-elect on this?
It's tough to know. Generally, Trump has been seen as more of a harsh negotiator, not willing to give up ground. So will Canada bend backwards to make that happen, or will Canada say enough's enough? Or, I mean, Trump's Trudeau in Canada has his own political challenges. I believe there will be an election in Canada eventually. So will Trudeau say, all right, we'll roll with this, and will, you know, another Canadian administration look at it completely differently? I think it's probably not good business sense to your neighbors to treat them this way, to suddenly say, we're going to do this if you don't do this, right? That's not usually what friends do and allies do. So I think the risk is that if the U.S. miscalculates, yeah, Trump may get his way, but at what cost? There's a steep cost there. The friendship, you know, is two-way. I think Trump is thinking this friendship is more one-way, and so it could hurt the U.S. in the long haul.
I think also he's looking to show the public he's going to get a win, right? And he feels like he has more of a lever, more of a power with Canada. There's no comparison with the conversation on immigration, fentanyl with Canada versus Mexico. So if he gets any sort of conciliatory move, he will show, guess what? My tariffs or my tariff threats work. And then he'll brag about the money he saved us. And by the way, the money wouldn't have been saved if he wouldn't have threatened the tariffs in the first place.
And the other worry as an analyst I have, in addition to that, is when is Canada going to say, well, the U.S. is no longer, you know, our most reliable trading partner. Why don't we build pipelines so we don't have to rely on the U.S.? Just like U.S. companies have done in China, where the situation is less stable, U.S. companies have said, let's diversify. When does this put the U.S. at risk for countries diversifying away from us?
How realistic is that for Canada?
I mean, they already built the Trans Mountain Pipeline. The Canadian government bought a pipeline from Kinder Morgan that connects from Alberta to Vancouver, and that is now 1 million barrels a day of capacity. That's 1 million barrels a day of Canadian oil that now heads out of the United States. And, you know, if the Keystone Pipeline's built, that's actually going to be another route that Canadian oil could take down to be exported out of the United States. So there's a risk here, and Trump has said he may approve the Keystone. I don't know if TransCanada or TC Energy will build it, but if you do, you're basically giving Canada another way to export oil away from the United States, and that's a risk because we do rely on that oil.
You're short, so I'll finish with this broad question. When you look at how Trump Term 1 handled oil, refineries, gas prices, and you contrast that with the soon-to-be-done Biden administration, how would you lay that out to people who trust your expertise in this area?
Well, I think Trump is generally less hostile to the oil sector. I think he's more friendly. He likes to deregulate. This tariff is completely the opposite of that. And I think Biden was certainly much less open to being friendly with the oil industry. And I think a lot of people would overestimate or underestimate the potential there. I think Biden got a really bad draw because he came into the White House and we saw a superheated U.S. economy, which caused a lot of imbalances. And there was also a Russia war in Ukraine, a major oil producer waging war that is outside of a president's control. But he also didn't help by immediately shutting down the Keystone and basically putting a target on oil companies' back. So generally, you know, Biden was less friendly. Trump is going to be more friendly. That's what he's said. But this is not so much of a friendly move. This would potentially backfire.
And the last thing real quick, gas prices are low right now because?
Seasonality. Americans drive less, and because a lot of those imbalances that we felt 2 years ago have finally normalized after a couple of years. Russia's war in Ukraine is no longer new. It's no longer as major of a risk. And COVID imbalances have been solved by the Federal Reserve raising interest rates. That has successfully slowed the economy. It's slowed oil demand here. And China has helped us out by seeing a slowdown in their economy as well.
Patrick, excellent. Thank you so much. Have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll reach out down the line.
You as well. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Are you prepared for the tariff roller coaster? It's counter to free trade, which has been a huge part of Republican philosophy. And when people say, okay, wait, you're a big lefty. First of all, you're wrong. I just know Donald Trump's a raging narcissist and I don't want him near the White House. But when I talk about leaning right economically, free trade is one example. Now, getting rolled on and countries taking advantage of you? No. And, you know, he is the guy who wrote the book, Art of the Deal. He thinks of negotiations one way. I think that was such a good point by Patrick. I mean, a lot of people think, okay, how could we make a deal that's good enough for both sides so we're going to get a deal? Trump thinks, how am I going to get a deal that's great for me? Well, all of us would like the deal that's great for us, but shockingly, the other side gets a word.
He's like an annoying fantasy football owner.
Yeah.
You give me a Lamar Jackson.
I'll give you Nick Muse, who the Vikings yeah, just cut.
Exactly right.
But, you know, so we were a part of inflation. Let's be honest again. It's still out there, and it was a huge advantage to Donald Trump in winning every single swing state. And Biden and Harris, their PR on this, matching reality, was awful. Because we are doing better than many Western countries. The improvement is there. But as I've said a bunch of times the last month, if you're in Duluth and you're going to the grocery store, you don't care that, hey, I'm better than the folks in Dusseldorf. So if we're going to, like, again, when he's just lying to us. Let me just be crystal clear. Lying to us when he says, here's how tariffs work. When we put a tariff on, they're just going to have to pay more money. No, we're going to pay for it. Now, he is bluster. And a lot of negotiating is bluster. I don't want the tariffs to happen. I'd like our inflation to go the other way. To me, there are so many things set up for Donald Trump to pat himself on the back, separate his shoulder, saying the economy's rolling. Because some parts of the economy are doing well. And the further we get away from inflation, the better. Tariffs, I think they're going to take us back the other way. Where do you stand on tariffs? And by the way, oh, I'm excited to pay 35 50, 70 cents more, and we're really going to blame Trudeau and folks coming in from Canada and the fentanyl crisis? Really? That's the energy right now to cause us to pay more gas prices? Hell no for me. Where do you stand? 651-461-9226. Hey, Chad. And then I think they're saying to Patrick DeHaan, gas is down 40 cents since the election. I saw 252 this morning. So everything you're talking about does not equate to where gas prices were pre-election. Nice try. Okay. If this person thinks DeHaan is on the take or some diehard lefty, you're paying no attention. He laid it out. He talked about the transition. He talked about moving further and further past COVID. He talked about the effect of the Fed. I love when somebody is going at Patrick DeHaan, who's just a disseminator of information. Does he think, what giant conspiracy are we suggesting now? That gas prices are just magically going down because Trump won the election? That's it? Trump wins and gas prices don't go down. That's as silly, that's as farcical as when people would tweet out, Dave, excuse me, gas prices, 2020, they were fill in the blank. And look what they are under Joe Biden, pick a year. Hey, naive person, the economy for the world had stopped. No one was buying gas. So guess what? Gas prices, shockingly, are going to go down. I'm not Gas Buddy Guy Jr., but even I can figure that out.
Could have stayed down, Chad, but I noticed they didn't. Thanks, Joe Biden.
Yeah, because Donald Trump and Joe Biden did something crazy. They put money into our pockets, and Joe went too far. Do we know if Donald would have went too far? Wasn't like Donald really slowed down the growth of our deficit and debt.
Did he spend a little bit?
Yeah, he did. So let's just have an honest conversation. We're always better off than other countries. You pretend other countries don't have tariffs against us. Yeah, there are. Every country is going to create a situation which is best for them. And if more of these turn out to be threats and it's a lever which works, I'm for it. But if he goes through with it, I just want people to be honest about what is causing the inflation. Because tariffs will be an enormous part. If we go through a brief period of inflation, and in the long run, it gets us to better growth, I will be the first person to say it worked. Because guess what? I'd like to make more money. I'd like for the rest of us to make more money. Crazy. Linda's Construction Time Check. It's time for me to talk. It's time for you to replace your old windows with Infinity from Marvin and get free installation labor.